Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is On Air Daily News for Monday, June 12, 2023. I'm Naima Latif, and today we're reporting live from the White House Press Room, where we are joining the White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre for a press briefing. Today, we want to bring you additional news from the Office of the First Lady. First Lady Dr. Jill Biden will pay tribute to nearly 3 million women who have served the nation during a Women's Veterans Recognition Day event celebrating the 75th anniversary of the Women's Armed Services Integration Act. The event is being held at the Military Women's Memorial in Arlington, Virginia. The First Lady is delivering remarks, and this event is open to the press and managed by the Military Women's Memorial. At 6 p.m. today, the First Lady will deliver remarks at a political event for the Biden Victory Fund in New York City. And now we are joined with White House Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre for today's press briefing.
Good afternoon, everyone. Happy Monday. I do have a couple things at the top. So today we mark 7 years since the tragic Pulse nightclub shooting. In the middle of Pride Month in 2016, our nation suffered what was then the deadliest mass shooting in American history. 49 people, predominantly Latino members of the LGBTQI plus community, lost their lives in a senseless act of gun violence. Today, we pray for the families of the victim and every survivor who still carries the trauma. In 2021, President Biden signed a bill designating Pulse nightclub as a national memorial, enshrining into law that it is hallowed ground. The president is continuing to fight to end the gun violence epidemic and continue to urge Congress to make common sense reforms to keep our communities safe. This Pride Month, the Biden-Harris administration is going to continue lifting the LGBTQI plus community up and honor the victims who aren't here with us today. Tomorrow, the House will mark up the GOP tax scam 2.0, which they released on Friday. This bill makes House Republicans' values clear. Their priority isn't reducing the deficit. It's giving handouts to rich special interests and corporations that make the debt even larger. Just weeks ago, House Republicans were demanding devastating cuts to programs hardworking Americans count on, from healthcare to public safety to Meals on Wheels, in the name of fiscal responsibility. But now they are proposing to spend hundreds of billions on tax breaks for big corporations, and they're laying the groundwork to spend trillions of additional tax cuts skewed to the wealthy and big corporations. We would do that while repealing clean energy tax credits that are fueling our manufacturing resurgence, creating jobs, and lowering energy costs for working families. That would ship jobs overseas and raise taxes for some middle-class families. And they're prioritizing restoring expired tax breaks for big corporations over restoring helping working families that need a little bit more breathing room as it relates to childcare and other things that are important to American families. Those are not the president's values. Instead of failed trickle-down policies, President Biden is growing the economy from the middle up and middle out and bottom up. His economic plan would cut taxes for working people, families with children, and it would pay for those tax cuts and reduce the deficit by ending the taxpayer subsidies for extremely profitable industries and making the wealthy and big corporations pay their fair share. That's an agenda the American people support. So just moments ago, we made an announcement from here, and we are very excited to announce that Tom Perez will be serving as senior advisor, assistant to the president, and director of intergovernmental affairs. Tom will build on the tremendous work of Julie Rodriguez. He brings decades of experience to the White House, having served in local, state, and federal government. His perspective and relationships as a former county councilman, a top civil rights attorney, and Secretary of Labor will be invaluable as we continue to work on government to implement our Investment of America and continue to make our government work for the people and for communities across the country. With that, we have the Admiral in the room today to take any foreign policy questions that you all have. I know it's been a couple of days. Admiral, the podium is yours. Thanks,
Tony. How y'all doing today? I don't have any opening statements, so.
Okay. Well,
over to you.
You told me that.
I did.
Hi, John. I'm doing this. So I'm wondering if you've completed or if you're in the process of a review to determine how the documents at Mar-a-Lago have impacted national security.
Yeah, so I think the Office of the Director of National Intelligence has already spoken to the fact that that they were conducting a national security assessment, and I would refer you to them. I don't have any update on that one way or the other.
So today during an interview, Senator Rubio said that there's no allegation that there was harm done to the national security. Does that stand as of now?
Again, I'd refer you to the Director of National Intelligence. They are working with the Justice Department on this, and they did say that they were going to conduct a national security assessment. I don't know the status of it. They'd be the ones to talk to you about that.
The administration now says that China already does have this intelligence facility in Cuba. What can you tell us broadly about the threat posed by this facility, and just bottom line, how concerned should Americans be that the Chinese are listening to it?
Yeah, so look, I think you can understand why we're not going to be able to get into too much detail about our own counterintelligence efforts. But as we communicated over the weekend, this is not a new development that China's been trying to achieve some intelligence gathering capabilities in Cuba and frankly elsewhere in the hemisphere. And that from day one, when we came in, we took this issue seriously. We've taken some steps to try to mitigate the vulnerability of those activities, and we're going to keep doing that. And the last thing I'll say is we're confident that we can continue to protect our nation's secrets in this hemisphere and beyond, and that that we can continue to defend the country appropriately.
And can you just explain why you didn't confirm all of this when it was first reported last week? You said it was inaccurate, but what was inaccurate seems to basically be the tense that they, you know, weren't going to establish, but had already established this facility. Why wait till Saturday to put this out there?
I'm actually really glad you asked that question. I can tell you that we were as forthcoming as we should have been at the time the first stories appeared. There is the sensitive nature of this information is such that we just simply couldn't go into more detail even before the first story appeared to try to better inform that reporting. That's how sensitive this stuff is. We just couldn't be more detailed. And then after the first stories appeared, we worked very, very hard, as expeditiously as we could, with the intelligence community to try to get some context downgraded so that we could provide it over the weekend, and we did that. But we were as forthcoming as we should have been, given the nature of this information. Sadly, not everybody seems to take it as seriously as we do, because clearly there's a source or sources out there that think it's somehow beneficial to put this kind of information into the public stream, and it's absolutely not. And there's a limit even now to what we can say about our knowledge of these activities. And I can just tell you, as somebody who works with all of you on lots of different sensitive stories, I wasn't about, in any way, shape, or form, to violate operational security by talking in any more detail, either before the first story or after the first story.
Go ahead, Nadia. Thank you. Two questions, first on Iran and second on Sudan. On Iran, the Israeli Prime Minister saying that any potential deal between the administration and Iran is not going to be binding for Israel. I know the White House denied the talks, but how will complicate the bigger picture if Israel actually does not cooperate
with them. We consult with Israel very, very closely. As a matter of fact, I think you know, coordinator for the Middle East, Brett McKirk, was in the region not long ago and had meetings with Israeli counterparts. We consult with them very, very closely. We have a shared idea of the continuing destabilizing behavior and threats coming from Iran in the region. Again, I'm not going to confirm press reports about deals or no deals. We are laser focused on the destabilizing activity, and it crosses a lot of realms, not just the nuclear ambitions, but the increasing ballistic missile capabilities, the burgeoning defense relationship with Russia, the support to Russia in Ukraine, the harassing of maritime shipping, the support of terrorist networks in the region. I could go on and on. And we talk with the Israelis all the time about this. We have a common sight picture about these threats. Now, the Israelis can speak for themselves, as any nation can speak for themselves about how they're going to deal with the threat. All I can do is tell you what we're doing.
The administration efforts, along with the Saudis, have not succeeded of ending the bloodshed or even sustaining the ceasefire. Is there anything more that can be done to stop?
We're still in jail. We still want to see a ceasefire. We still want to see a transition to civilian authority. We still want to see both sides put their guns down. And we're going to stay at that work through diplomacy.
An American citizen, Travis Zeke, was arrested in Russia on drug charges. I'm wondering if you have any comments on that arrest and to what extent you are working to determine whether this is a similar wrongful detention.
I don't have a lot more information on the arrest itself. I'd really refer you to the State Department. I know that the State Department is, at least as of my coming out here, trying to get in touch with the family, and they're looking into this case. As far as I know, consular officers were present at his arraignment and did get a consular visit with him. We'll obviously continue to monitor this and stay in touch with his case as much as possible, but it's just too soon for me to be able to characterize it one way or another. And I think you asked about a wrongful detention. That's going to be up to the State Department to look at.
The president briefed on this case.
I don't know. I don't have an update on the degree to which the president was updated.
And secondly, President Zelensky has not confirmed that a counteroffensive is underway in Ukraine. The Ukrainian military says that it took back 3 villages in eastern Ukraine, but they also appear to be taking heavy losses, including of U.S.-provided equipment. So I'm wondering what the U.S. assessment of this counteroffensive is.
We're going to refrain from providing an armchair assessment of this offensive. I'm going to still stay true to that. Look, offensive operations combat is happening. There's no question about that, but it's up to President Zelensky to characterize it, not us. And it's certainly going to be up to the Ukrainian armed forces to speak to the give and take on any given day. It's war, and it has already proven violent. What we're going to stay focused on is making sure that Ukraine can succeed on the battlefield. You saw a package of assistance coming through the USAI program announced at the end of the week. I think very, very soon you're going to see some additional drawdown packages coming from the United States. It won't surprise you that the kinds of things you'll see us continue to give Ukraine are the kinds of things that we know they need in this particular fight.
Can you now tell us whether the Ukrainians provided you any notice that these operations were underway now that they've confirmed? I know you've been cagey about saying whether or not...
I'm not cagey, I'm careful. they had no obligations to give us any kind of heads up or inform us of their operations, nor have they ever in the last 15 months.
Just quickly to close the loop on the China-Cuba story, you know, there are many times when we come to you with stories that are based on classified information, I'm sure, often to your chagrin. Going forward, should we expect that the administration is not going to be fully forthcoming when we do have stories like that?
What you can take to the bank, Trevor, is that we'll be as forthcoming with you as we can. There's all kinds of different classified information out there. You know that. Different labels, different classifications on it. Sometimes there's information that is so classified and so secret that there's a real limit. In fact, there's a real danger to somebody like me trying to provide you a steer before you report. And that was the case here. We were careful. And all I can promise you is that we'll be as forthcoming with you as we can. The fact that we came out a couple of days later and provided some clarifying information does not mean and should not be taken, as I've seen in some of the press reporting, as some kind of walk back. The original reporting, as we said, was inaccurate. And we did the best we could in the moment to be as forthcoming as we could. Unfortunately, it wasn't going to prevent some inaccurate reporting. After the first reports, we worked to get some additional context downgraded, but even that had to be carefully scrutinized. It's shameful that somebody or somebodies somehow think it's okay to put this kind of information in the public bulletin. Now, you're just doing your jobs. I get that. You got to ask tough questions, and people are going to come to you with all kinds of sensitive information. We'll do the best we can to provide you a steer and to let you know what the vulnerabilities are. Obviously, you and your bosses make the decision about whether you're going to report on it. But I'm comfortable that we were as forthcoming as we should have been and could have been in the moment and remain that way right now.
And just on this Goldenberg meeting that's tomorrow now, should we expect that President Biden will be prepared to address any concerns that the NATO Secretary General might have about the handling of classified information related to the Trump indictment?
The agenda for the meeting with the Secretary General is going to be pretty wide-ranging. Obviously, it's going to be very, very focused on Ukraine and what the alliance is doing to support Ukraine, what the United States is going to continue to do to support Ukraine. And certainly, it's in keeping with the Secretary General's pre-summit travel. He's making his way to all the capitals, including Washington, and that's really going to be the focus.
And will the President ask the Secretary General to stay on for another term?
I'm not going to get ahead of the President's decision-making with respect to who would be the next Secretary General. We're grateful for Secretary General Stoltenberg's leadership. Now he's gotten extended three times, and he's led the alliance at a very, very critical time, not least of which, even without the war in Ukraine, it would be a critical time, certainly in that context. He's just done a superb job.
Thank you, John. I want to take another stab with the Mar-a-Lago document. Given that we've seen images that some of them had put the Five Eyes on it, have you guys done anything, or can you walk us through what you have done to assure allies about this type of intelligence? And if there's any intelligence, you're not getting the intelligence.
I appreciate the question and where you're trying to go, Matt. I'm just not going to be able to talk with any detail about those documents or this case. I mean, it's really for something for the Justice Department to speak to, and in terms of any national security assessment, that would be up to the Director of National Intelligence. Separate and distinct from all of that, and this kind of gets to my answer to Trump, we obviously take very seriously our responsibilities, protect classified information and to protect the nation's secrets. And what we're focused on is doing exactly that, is protecting the nation's secrets, protecting our ability to both collect intelligence and to analyze that and to use it to help better defend the country. That's what we're focused on.
You were just talking about it's shameful regarding the Cuba-China thing for that information.
I'm not going to care. This is really for the Justice Department.
Okay, and then just quickly on the meeting tomorrow with the Secretary General, can you walk us through sort of where the President is on Ukraine and whether the President thinks an invitation should be set for NATO membership to Ukraine? Is there any update as you guys move toward the NATO summit?
Well, without speaking to the conversation with the Secretary General, that hasn't happened yet. Our policy with respect to NATO membership hasn't changed. We obviously still support the NATO's open door policy, and those are discussions that have to be had with all 31 allies and, of course, the nation in question here. So we're not taking a position one way or another. I think you know that at Bucharest there was a declaration that made very clear that NATO should be in Ukraine's future at some point in the future. Nothing's changed about that.
Are you able to characterize at all what about the initial Wall Street Journal report was inaccurate?
No.
Okay. And can you be more precise on when precisely China established the base? I know you guys said it was at least 2019. That's as far as you can go.
Sure.
and trying to get on Stoltenberg. The Chinese believe it's important for the next NATO Secretary General to come from a country that has hit the 2% GDP in defense.
The president believes that whoever is the Secretary General of NATO should be an individual who the entire alliance can get behind. And lead the alliance into the future, because there's a transformative future ahead for the alliance. And whenever this war ends, however it ends, NATO is going to be different. For one thing, it's going to be larger. And Ukraine's going to be different, given the scope of westernization of their military. So whoever the next Secretary General is going to be, again, it has to be somebody that the whole alliance can get behind and can be a transformative leader. I think I'll leave it at that.
Thank you. I wanted to follow up on Cuba. Has there been any conversation with the Cuban government about the base of the Chinese trying to...
We've made our concerns.
To the Cuban government?
Yes, we have.
And on Colombia, if you could have... Do you have any comment on the ceasefire announced between the government and the ELN on Friday?
No, we're aware of those developments, but we don't have a, you know, we don't have a position to take right now. We refer to those parties.
John, a couple of questions to ask you, Zach. One, Shakoola Robinson. We know that former domestic policy advisor, as well as the head of public engagement, met with family and attorney about the possibility of extradition of the suspect. Anything new? Because Mexico was saying that they're waiting for the United States to move on the extradition of the suspect or suspects.
Don't have anything for you, April. Let me, if you allow me, we'll take the question and see if we can get you a better answer.
Make sure you get back to me, okay?
you mean you don't think I will?
I know you will, John. I know you will. But the next question really fast. As we're in this unprecedented moment, and the White House is very aware, I'm sure the President is very aware, and we're waiting for tomorrow, how would you qualify the move here, as this is such a serious moment with very sensitive information and a former president of the United States?
The president is focused on his tasks as commander-in-chief, April. Again, we're going to let the Justice Department speak to this. His focus is on making sure, as commander-in-chief, that he can continue to defend the country, continue to advance our economic competition with competitors like China, make sure that we can advance our foreign policy around the world. That's where his head is. It's squarely on the work in front of him.
But you can't ignore this moment, though. As this president is someone who is a student of history and part of history, to see the person that he was the next in line for to be going through this moment.
The president respects the rule of law and the democratic institutions of the United States of America, and takes very seriously his role as President of the United States in advancing that. And he also, as you've heard Kareem say much better than I can, he fully respects the independence of the Justice Department and allowing the Justice Department to do their job unimpeded and uninterrupted, certainly by him or anybody on his staff.
John, last Friday, during the press conference between President Biden and the Prime Minister, President Biden again emphasized the solar facility investment in Angola. Is there any possibility in the future President Biden visits Angola to see firsthand this solar facility that he keeps emphasizing?
I'm very proud of the work we're doing on the continent and in implementing so many of the things that we agreed to implement at the African Leaders Summit last December. And as you heard him say many times, he does plan to visit the continent. I just don't have anything on the schedule right now to speak to in terms of when and where and what that would look like.
Is there an effort to find the source of the leak on Cuba base now? And I guess the reason why this has been characterized as a walk back is that saying that the report was inaccurate left all of us with the impression that the space didn't exist or would not exist. Having heard you saying that you went as far as you could on that, was a reason for your statement at all related to Blinken's travel to China next week?
No.
And then John Ratcliffe said that the allegations there was a Chinese spy base in Cuba under the Trump administration.
investigation through, and our assessment is that the previous administration would have had the same access to that intelligence as we did.
Do you think they knew about it? And
that's up to them to speak to. They would have had the same access to the intelligence that we would have.
When you were briefed on its existence, was the administration told whether or not this information was embraced by the previous administration, or anything had been done about it?
I don't know about what was transferred in as part of the transition between the two administrations with respect to this particular issue. I just don't know.
So how should we understand him saying it didn't exist and you guys saying it did? What should we take away from that?
All I can tell you is that it's our assessment that the previous administration would have had access to the same intelligence that we did. Now, whether they availed themselves of that access, whether any one individual saw it and others didn't, I can't speak to it. We weren't here at the time.
Given the events in Miami tomorrow, we all understand that this administration or at least this White House is trying to distance itself from anything related to the Trump indictment. But if this were a different defendant and a different set of facts, there would always be some oversight from the White House for concerns about larger security issues outside of the court, the kinds of event-related things. Is the White House monitoring that in terms of Homeland Security beyond just at DHS headquarters or just at DOJ? So is there the normal interface? And my larger question is, because you're trying to not talk about it, does that make this more vulnerable to not have the oversight from the White House or the resources or the attention?
Does it make security more vulnerable because
the White House is trying to stay out of it?
Yep. The short answer to that, Kelly, is no. I mean, look, without getting into the specifics of this case, I won't do that. We maintain as a routine matter every day, we maintain connective tissue with state and local authorities for any potential of civic disturbances that could turn violent. That connective tissue still exists. It exists right now. It exists today, and we'll keep it going. I won't be able to speak with any more granularity about what security precautions might be taking place down there. But as a matter of course and standard procedure, we stay in touch with state and local authorities as appropriate.
So the Fit Room would monitor things tomorrow, like it would any other?
Like any other issue, we would certainly be paying close attention and making sure that to the degree that federal assistance is needed, you know, that it's provided. But again, I don't want to go beyond that, and I don't want to speculate about what might or might not happen tomorrow.
And that was the press briefing today from the White House, where Admiral John Kirby, National Security Council Coordinator for Strategic Communications at the White House, provided insight and answers to questions from the press. You've been listening to Air Daily News for Monday, June 12, 2023. I'm Naima Latif. Join us every day, Monday through Friday, 1 p.m. Central, 2 p.m. Eastern, and wherever you are, adjust your time to join us live. And if you'd like to call the station for some good news briefs, you can call in 515-605-9749 and share your good news from your neck of the woods. We're on Air Daily News, reporting live every day from across the country, across the world, and across the street from where you live. I'm Naima Latif. Until tomorrow, continue to enjoy the rest of your day.